Hi, I'm back. For some reason, when I put it on record, everybody went on to a music channel. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Please come off of mute and just let me know. Oh, good. It's good to hear your voices. Thank you. Well, welcome to our Tuesday night celebration of life. Sorry for that confusion there in the beginning. I was just reviewing the first three qualities of an intentional creator, and I won't go into as much detail on the recording. Just know that the very first thing we're going to want to do is start listening to people differently, noticing what's important to them and listening, being safe and creating a safe place. We give them the gift of feeling understood. We receive the cooperation and productivity that floods out from that experience. This is a wonderful way to start a relationship, a connection with a person. It is the greatest secret of success in all ventures. Then we learned how to use our mind constructively. And one of my favorite discussions we've ever had on the topic of mental creation occurred 2 weeks ago. I would highly recommend if anybody is struggling with catastrophe or fantasy, they're just overwhelmed and their mind is going a million miles an hour and they're just overwhelmed by frustration, go back and listen to that Tuesday night call 2 weeks ago. It was a very inspired moment that we had when we walked through those steps of how do we receive inspired ideas and impressions. When we do, it ignites part of our brain that's normally dormant. It ignites our passion. And what we know is that if this isn't happening, we're facing the work of creation. Without passion, it makes it boring and mundane and burdensome and hard. We don't want to have to do the work that we want to do it passion-driven. And there's a very specific way we ignite passion, focusing again, with quality one, on others. What can I create? How can I create that? How will that serve? Go back and listen to that piece. That's so important. And last week we talked about staying present in the now. In passion-driven action, we talked about power sessions and starting to create a plan. I was writing a document this afternoon for a company that has retained me to create a training program for all their salespeople. And I wrote toward the very end of this training program the fact that 99% of all people who are anxious and excited to create something magnificent with their life, it's just interesting that that's all of us, are naturally resistant to discipline and structure. And I said, why are we resistant? Because the structure is being imposed by others. We are independent thinkers. This is by way of introduction of our fourth quality of an intentional creator, discipline and structure. So just make that note, 99.5% of all people who come to this entrepreneurial, if you will, entrepreneurialism of intentionally creating their life are naturally resistant to discipline and structure. Why? Because the structure is being imposed by others. We are independent thinkers. I wrote, herein lies the biggest challenge to our dreams. The things we want, the freedom we hunger for, is often right behind the very things we are resisting. If we are to succeed in the creation of our dreams, we'll want to view structure as our ally, as a support for all of our actions. For this to happen, structure must be self-imposed. Self-imposed. We will want it. We will embrace it. We see it for what it is, the straightest line between where we are and where we want to be. We're going to take on this issue tonight, so that we can have a better understanding and step back from it, because the thought processes in this particular area of thought can be very loud, very controlling. They cause the release of molecules into our body. We actually feel these thought processes in the cells of our body. We think this is who we are. We get so attached that it's hard to step back from them And if we're in resistance to someone else trying to pose structure on us, you know, if we have a job and we have to do it, we'll be at best reluctant, resistant. If it's our own business and we're viewing that as someone trying to impose structure on us, we won't do it at all. We just won't do it. However, if we view it as something that's essential to our dreams, I want that to happen. But my dream is on the other side of this wall. And if I keep banging up against it and resisting it, I'll never get to my dream. I must break through this wall of my own resistance to structure in general, because I've been conditioned to resist it because it's been imposed on me. So I'm naturally resistant. So now I'm going to change my mindset, the way I view it, because it is critical to the success we desire to have. Now open up your assessments. Bottom left-hand side, discipline and structure. These are what we call systemic thoughts. The math of a systemic thought is very unique. It's dualistic in nature. It's all or it is nothing. It is right or it is wrong. It is life or it is death. There's no common sense. There's no practicality. There's no intrinsic value. It either is or isn't. When we teach this math to our coaches, we often draw a circle on a board. We say, what is that? That's a circle. Draw an oval next to it. Almost a circle, but not quite. What is that? What it is not a circle. It may be an oval. It could be a lot of other things, but it is not a circle. This is either or. So if you take your two fists and you spread your arms out a little bit, and your left-hand side is right, and your right-hand side is wrong, just know that there is there's nothing in between the two. These are polar opposites. It's not sort of right. It's not right working its way down from really right to kind of right to sort of right. No, it's either right or it is wrong. That's how these thought processes function. When we begin to comprehend this phenomenon, we begin to understand why they have so much power over us. Right, wrong, win, lose, life, death. So let's take it, each one of them, with that in mind and see what starts to happen. Discipline is the very first measurement. The question that we ask by the rankings that you did, what we're wanting to discover is, do your thoughts support an intrinsic value for structure? Does it see the importance of structure? 99.5% of entrepreneurs have this measurement orange, and some have it red. Just ask yourself this question. Do I follow rules because they're a rule? Or do I follow rules only when they make sense? Just make that determination right now. Just say it to yourself. Do I follow them because it's a rule? Yes, I do. We'd hope that would be the airplane pilot going through the check flight, pre-flight list. Or do you follow rules only when they make sense? The vast majority of entrepreneurial people follow rules only when they make sense. Now, that means we're going to be thinking outside the traditional box. When you work for a corporation, it's very systemic. That's the rule. That's the way we do it. That's the way we've always done it. We're not going to fix something that's not broken. You either follow the rules or you get fired. That's a tough environment for an entrepreneur or someone who's entrepreneurial, independent thinker. They see it and they make an analysis. Does it work? Does it make sense? No. Then I want to think outside the box. And they step outside the box and try to find another solution. Here is the challenge. When an entrepreneur finds the box, it's not a good idea It is the way. It's the way. An entrepreneur can be as stubborn about the box they have selected as a corporation might be about their rules and regulations, policies and procedures. Isn't it interesting? We may have gotten there by creativity. But once it is identified, we're back to the two fists. Right, wrong, win, lose, life, death, all, nothing. What happens when you have two partners in a partnership or two people in a committed relationship and they both are creative thinkers and they think outside the box and they're not always in the same box? Interesting challenge. Now, is it a good thing to be creative? Absolutely. Is it potentially harmful to need to be right about it? Yeah, so we'll talk about that in a little bit. So just know we're creative, we think outside the box. Once we see it, that's it. If you happen to be in a business, I was doing this consulting with a network marketing company, and you've got 99.5% of the people all thinking outside the box, rarely in the same box. Can you imagine if you're trying to manage these people? We've got to look at structure differently. Because if we're looking at it as the way, this is correct, my way or the highway, earn your first million my way, earn the second million your way, if that's how we view structure, we're going to create some really nasty problems. We're going to crush people. We're going to crush people. We'll talk about that, about letting go of the need to be right and how to step back from these thought processes. How to use the creative piece to find options, but then how to step back, sit in the observer's chair and not be controlled by the box, by the idea, so we don't crush. The next measurement's teachable. Right, wrong, win, lose, life, death. We have pretty strong ideas about the way things ought to be done. When this measurement turns orange or red, what it's telling us is that somewhere along the way, and occasionally I see someone who almost came out of the womb like this. It's okay. Very independent. Generally conditioned. We call it nurturing. It's not their nature. They weren't born with it. It was their nurture. It's what happened during the course of their life. At one point in time, they were in a controlling situation. And it was like as if they were saying consciously or unconsciously, if I ever can break out of this, I will never allow myself to be put in another situation where someone can control me. Just take a look at your teachable and look and see, is it orange or red? It's called, just see if you can think back to a time. Was it a parent? Was it a former spouse? Maybe a current one? Or a companion, friend, brother, sister? Boss, was there someone like that? This we know. When it's orange, it has a fair amount of control over us. It wants us, right, wrong, win, lose, to be right about our opinion. Someone in this measurement, teachable, I didn't describe that very well. They're trying to impose their structure on us. Discipline is about the structure. This measurement is about the person who's imposing the structure. It's the messenger of the structure, the messenger. So who's the messenger? Was there a dad? Was there a mom? Was there a school teacher, a professor, a boss, a friend, a companion, a brother, a sister who was trying to always impose their will on us, and we're resisting, although it that time we may not have had any options, but now we do. We've conditioned ourselves. We've created a habit that anytime someone tries to use their authority to impose structure on us, just pushes that button. And we're in resistance. Right, wrong, win, lose, life, death, done. interesting challenge. We want to step back from this one. If it's orange, there's a very good chance we have thought about saying something in those moments. We may have. We may have been able to step back enough because it didn't have total control over us. But if this measurement is red, I just know, and you know too, if you've got a red measurement in Teachable, there have been times when you have opened your mouth and spoken your mind. You just did. Someone tried to use their authority or leverage their position, or who do they think they are, and kabam. And it might have been the person who cut your paycheck or made the decision whether or not you could stay somewhere. Just feel that all, nothing, right, wrong, win, lose. When it is all, or it is nothing, or it is life, or it is death, when that has taken over at that level, at red, it's almost impossible not to speak. It's almost impossible not to speak. So you can chuckle now, because if you have, you know why. Analytical. This measurement tells me how much time you spend thinking about thinking. If it's blue, it's a normal amount. If it's green, it's starting to get a little bit more. Starts turning orange, starts turning red. It just becomes obsessive and compulsive. And if we're in orange and red, you want to ask yourself, what are you doing to shut this one off? What are you doing to shut this one off? Do you do yoga? Do you listen to music? Read a book? Most people sleep. This is also, I believe, it's anecdotal, but having seen it now several hundred times in this situation, it's also one of the causes for people anesthetizing their thought processes with substances, alcohol and drugs. It finally shuts it off. It is so constant. There's no break from it. I've often compared it to a wild Mustang on the prairie. We are either sitting in the saddle and riding it, or we have our foot stuck in the stirrup and it's dragging us through the prairie. It never stops. We'll want to step back from it and stop, but it'll continue going. Now that, it could be a great gift. Effortless thinking. The ability to just turn yourself loose on an idea and come up with a solution. You'll step into a situation and analyze all the possible iterations very quickly. You'll see, use that key phrase, you'll see a solution. You'll get it. I've been having a fascinating experience with my father. My father was a computer engineer for years. And his job was to fix computers that nobody else could fix. They were government contracts. He couldn't even tell us where he's going. Now in his memoirs, he's talked about some of the islands he's been on and some of the places, wind tunnels for airplanes and university computers. When these are classified projects these computers are working on, and when nobody else could fix it, when it was all over with, they sent in Tom Blanchard. And for decades, he never failed. And he's just beginning at age 81 to figure this out. He would walk in. He has analytical red. And he could just see. He could grasp very quickly all the complexities of what's happening and structure this and put it together. It frustrated the heck out of him that he would often show up at 5 o'clock at night, having flown most of the day to get there, and everybody else is leaving. Well, we did our best. We tried our hardest. And he would just stay till it was fixed, sometimes 2 or 3 days, very little sleep, if any, sleeping on the floor if he has to. It had to get back up again. It was critical. They couldn't see. They did not have this gift of effortless thinking. I share that story with you because many of you who have this thought process have also been frustrated with people. When you give them an assignment or ask them to do something, it could be a child, it could be in a community. community service, it could be at work. They come back and they report. And it's like you haven't thought about it for days, and all of a sudden you just it's in front of you, ever present. Well, did you consider this? Did you consider that? Well, no. Well, it's like, are you stupid? I mean, come on. If you've ever had those kind of feelings, you may not have verbalized them, but if you have, just know that if you have the gift of effortless thinking, where it's this powerful, you're going to see things others don't see. So just know that and be very patient. Use their research as a catalyst to help you move it forward and not as a frustration for what they weren't able to do. You can see it. You can see what they didn't see. So fill in the blanks and carry on. It saved you all the basic stuff they did for you. That's analytical. Fascinating measurement. Obsessive thinking. It is a great gift if you can step back from it and have a mechanism for managing it. If you don't, what's going to happen is this. You spend a lot of hours in this space. This is where you're going to live most of the time, thinking. When we think this much, our mind builds what they call mental constructs. It constructs this idea in your mind. And when it's constructed, which could be instant or over a period of time of thinking, but when it's constructed, it's a non-negotiable mental monolith. If someone were to challenge you and disagree with you or to try and change in the slightest manner what you have come up with in terms of a mental construct, it's as if they're trying to change history. It's a done deal. It hasn't happened yet. It's just an idea. But in the mind, it's a done deal. All or nothing. I'm doing this with my fists again. Over here to the left, over here to the right. All, nothing. Right, wrong. Win, lose. And I wrote in my book, you could destroy a marriage over the correct topping for a pizza. Pepperoni or sausage? And my friend, I recorded in the book, said, no, it was a bagel. This is probably one of the potentially most damaging discipline in terms of the box, and needing to be right about the box. Analytical, need to be right about the idea. Then teachable, being resistant to anyone who tries to leverage us. Either they have power over us, or they have money over us, or debt over us. Anything that would give them any power at all or perceived power. How are we doing so far? Anybody have any questions about the first three? Okay. Methodical. Methodical asks the question, okay, we have a mental monolith. When someone has an idea different than ours, is there absolute evidence that we cannot let go? If your methodical is orange, then it just tells me this is a real serious, serious problem. Analytical can be by itself, and I'll take you to some other measurements in a moment for you to help better understand. Consistent. We have a scheduled event, and we come to it, and it's all or nothing. And generally, when we face something we don't want to do, we just postpone it to another time, when it's far enough away that it's safe, but close enough that we can feel that it's still going to be done. And then we get there, and we might postpone it again. All or nothing. We don't think in terms of taking that tough event and breaking it down into pieces, just some common sense. Well, I do just a little bit of it right now, and a little bit of it tomorrow, and a little bit of it the next day. It's all or it's nothing. It's right or it's wrong. And some tasks can't be done all at once. We just cannot schedule enough time and energy to do something like that. So consistent as orange, just know that you're taking difficult tasks and it's all or nothing versus breaking them down, stepping back from them and being having more practical approach. And Loyal asks us what happens in terms of administering rules and regulations, policies and procedures. Are we really tough? Are we just a little bit liberal? All or nothing. These are the measurements. Systemic thoughts. Now, when we were doing this assessment, and we've done 25,000 of these in the last 4 years. In the last 10 years, I personally debriefed over 5,000 of them. It's been fascinating to watch this left-hand side, this bottom left-hand side, discipline and structure, and see these measurements and make this discovery. Over 95% of the time, when disciplined is orange, we got to think outside the box. And then we need to be right about the box. Teachable is orange. It could be one or a combination of any one of these. Teachable is orange. And we're resisting authority. We need to be right about that. Analytical, constantly, obsessively thinking. And we need to be right about our ideas. Over 95% of the time, when someone challenges us, we see measurements in the top right-hand side, self-esteem, start to turn orange. We discovered this, that these are not just ideas we need to be right about. It's personal. We have invested at such a high level, this personal part of us, this thought process we're living with every day has created this idea. It's personal. And when someone doesn't agree with our idea, we just go over to self-esteem and say, which button are they pushing? So just take a look at your assessment and ask the question, whole and complete, first measurement, self-esteem. If it's orange, they're going to push the button of your worth. They don't feel that I'm worth anything. So that's a really deeply personal challenge. They don't think I'm worth anything. Wow. That's a really personal response to someone disagreeing with us. Confident, the question becomes our ability. They're questioning my ability. Valiant, they're questioning my belief systems. Now, it's interesting that when these measurements are orange and red over in self-esteem, those are the same dialogues we're having with ourselves about ourselves. That's what we're saying to ourselves. So when someone else questions our idea, the weak points in self-esteem are the very places our thought processes are attacking us. I hope I'm making this clear tonight more than ever before, that, wow, why am I taking this so personally? Or someone says to you, why are you taking this so personally? Well, just a minute, let me go get my assessment. Oh, you're calling into question my worth. Because that's what I do. Oh, no, you're calling into question my ability. Because that's what I do. These are weak spots in our self-esteem that are vulnerable. When we need to be right about something and someone doesn't agree with us, it's over 95% of the time we see a direct relationship between measurements that are orange and disciplined, teachable, analytical, but are also creating some challenges in the self-esteem. Just one moment, please, everyone. I'm getting an emergency call from my father. Bear with me. Okay, all is well. We're talking about my father earlier. Dad's 81, mom's 82, and their health is really fragile. So when the office phone calls twice and the cell phone starts ringing, it's from them. It's important, but it's not critical, so we're okay. Okay, back to this point. If 95% of the time we get so attached to our thought processes that if someone summarily dismisses us or doesn't agree with us, we take it personally. It's like they're questioning our worth and worthiness, our ability, or our beliefs. Just know this. When the roles are reversed and we need to be right and somebody else needs to be wrong, there's over a 95% chance we're doing it to them. This is motivation enough to figure out how to handle this challenge. When we need to be right, someone not only needs to be wrong, that's the only other option, right, wrong, they get to be crushed. And if we've ever been crushed by someone who didn't agree with us, we know what it feels like. It's not very comfortable. It certainly is not validating. So as we're going to go into in just a few moments some of these principles about controlling these systemic thoughts so that we can use the gift of the creativity, we can use the gift of the independence, we can use the gift of the constant thinking, but we don't let the shadow side into our life, which is needing to be right and crushing people. We want to manage that piece. Use the effortless thinking to be able to solve problems, but be able to step back from the solutions and not crush someone. This is a key piece of managing a systemic thought. So let's shift to that. Before I do, any questions about what's been discussed so far? Has anybody had an insight or a thought so far this evening we'd like to share? Okay, let's move to these two principles, letting go of the need to be right and looking for the good in other people. What we want to start out with is a conversation. Just put ourselves in a conversation. We're talking to someone. It might be a committed companion. It might be a child. It might be a coworker. It might be an employee or an employer. It might be a friend. We're listening. And we have a strong opinion. Our mind has thought through this. We have effortlessly thought through this. We know exactly what we want to create. And they don't agree with us. Just know that if we stay in this space, there is no good in their idea. It's all or it's nothing. It's all our idea or nothing. It is life or it is death. So we step back and we step up. The assessment was designed for you to see systemic, that's the bottom section. The next level up is extrinsic. The next level up is intrinsic. Each one of them a higher level of thought. Right, wrong, win, lose thinking is the lowest level of thought. It's important, but it's the lowest level of thought. Higher than this is the physical creation piece, which is extrinsic thought, which is about common sense, practical judgment, getting things done, working out the details, negotiating, compromising. That's common sense. We're going to step back from our systemic thoughts and say, stay right there. I appreciate you feel strongly about this. I got that. And you don't want me to find good in their idea because you think they're going to be right and you'll be destroyed. Because that's how you process. That's how you process. I'm going to step back and I'm going to invite my extrinsic thoughts. You don't need to remember that. Just remember common sense, practical judgment. To come in, and from a practical standpoint, I look over at that person and say, you know, I don't want to do damage here. If I could help find some good in their idea, they'd feel better about working and participating and contributing. That's common sense. Now we go up one step higher to intrinsic, and we say they're priceless. They're a human being. As a human being, not regarding the idea, the human being is more valuable than the idea. Okay, so from a practical standpoint, an intrinsic standpoint, the value of the human being, now I can find the courage, the reason, a purpose behind stepping into their world and listening. This is a very high level of intrinsic validation from principle number one, quality number one, connection with people. What we know is this, from a practical standpoint, we know that their idea is attached to their self-worth. So either they're going to fight to be right to protect it, or they're going to be crushed by me if I need to be right. Don't want to do that. From a practical standpoint, I know that their idea is tied to their self-worth. So if I can find good in their idea, it's as if I'm finding good in them. That makes practical sense. So I listen, and I look for good. If I can, and it's a big if sometimes, can separate myself from my idea, this is sometimes very hard to do, but if I can, I'm going to instantly start to find good in their idea. There is no good when we're being systemic. When we're looking at it from a practical standpoint, common sense, intrinsic value of the human being, all of a sudden it frees us up to see the good. Now, we don't have to agree with them to see the good. We just see the good. And when we see it, oh my goodness, what I like best about your idea is this. What I like best about your idea is this. Now, they feel valued. Walls come down. I started this evening by saying cooperation and productivity floods out. Yes. Now we're not in a right-wrong, win-lose battle. Now we're in compromise, discussion, possibilities. And if our idea truly is the very best, it will surface as such, from common sense. But if we stay in systemic right-wrong, win-lose, doesn't matter how poor another person's idea is, or even how poor ours is, we'll fight to the death because our self-esteem is on the line. Our self-esteem is on the line. So here's your assignment this week. Now, you've coached with me before. We've done it privately. We've done it in groups. I can tell you this week, I was in a very intense meeting with a lot of powerful people making a business decision, and very conscious of that moment. You know what I like best about that idea is this. You know, what would you think if we took that and this one over here and we put those together and this allowed us to do this and we create consensus in a discussion? This is so powerful. As simple as it may sound, because when people get attached who don't know the secret of controlling their mind, we use awareness, a heightened level of awareness, agape love, as our greatest weapon, and none on whom I call could defend against this force, Og says. It's an awareness. It's not manipulation. I find good in their idea, and I know they'll feel better about themselves. Their walls are come down. We can finally have a conversation, and we can get to the very best solution for the problem, and everybody will have buy-in. So your assignment this week is to be conscious in moments when you truly want to be right and step back and look for the good in the other person's idea. The number one place to start is in a relationship. If you have a committed companion, next is with a child, coworker, employer, employee. Work your way out. When someone shares an idea, sometimes we're just too big a hurry. We got so much to do. We don't have time to think about it. No. There's a human being there. That's a human being. They have an idea. Can we hear them out? Can we find the good in their idea? Have their walls come down and get their cooperation and productivity from a practical standpoint. That's your assignment. Look for the good. And when you find it, you say, what I like best about your idea is, and we share it. And just watch the energy shift in the conversation. It's extremely powerful. And you know the secret. You know the secret. And it's not manipulative. You actually have to care enough about them to do this. Because otherwise, systemic thoughts will overrule. Absolutely overrule. Right, wrong, win, lose, life, death. They will control the day unless we truly care. And we can't fake caring. So this is when the rubber meets the road. This is when we test our mettle. Is the person more important than the idea? Can we do this? That's our first assignment. Our second assignment. Some of you have done this. Every time we come back to it, I hear more emails from people who finally did it or did it with another person and made a discovery. It's sitting down with someone who might have been adversely impacted by us when we're listening to these systemic thoughts and we need to be right. Have we crushed some people along the way? Let's see if we can identify anybody we may have crushed or offended or frustrated. Sit down with them. Ask for an appointment or just sit down with them at a time that's convenient and just say, what's it been like for you to be in a relationship with me for 6 months, 5 years, 38 years, whatever it might be, when I need to be right? What's that like for you? Just know it's, you could take it personally too. That's the self-esteem buttons. They're talking to you about what it's like when you surrender your free will to your systemic thoughts. That's what they're talking about. Listen to them. Bite your tongue. Don't respond. When they're done, just thank them for sharing. Then be very careful the next 12 to 24 hours. You don't get defensive. Try to go in there and somehow explain that what they said the night before wasn't quite accurate and you need to fix it. Just let it go. To say, thank you, I'll be working on that. A couple weeks later, sit down with them again. How's it been for the last couple weeks? Is it getting better? Give me some feedback. There's nothing more destructive to a relationship than someone who has strong opinions and needs to be right about them. Nothing more destructive. Well, that's our homework this week, is to work on the two most common destructive uses of these systemic thoughts, while embracing their gifts, the creativity, the independence, the effortless thinking. Embrace the strengths, let go of the need to be right, and look for ways to find good in other people's ideas. Now, in terms of thought processes and scrolls, I would like tonight if we spent the week with scroll number 6. I'll be the master of my emotions. Weak is he who allows his thoughts to control his actions. Strong is he who forces his actions to control his thoughts. My action is an extrinsic concept. I look for the good. I let go of the need to be right. That's when I'm strong. When I let my actions control my thoughts. So read Scroll 6. It's a wonderful scroll in terms of mastering our emotions. And as he says in the scroll, there will be days, there will be times when I must constantly struggle against forces that would tear me down. Sometimes that could be discouragement and fear and frustration. But most often as it relates to these thought processes, it's when we just have strong opinions and need to be right. We constantly struggle against these forces that would tear not only us down, but everyone around us. Okay. That's what I wanted to share with you this evening. Does anybody have any questions or comments or anything I can do to serve you in a specific area of your life or business?
Dave, this is Diana.
Hi, Diana.
Hi.
You're going to report back to us this week, aren't you?
Well, yes, I was. I guess quickly I can tell you my friend was very receptive, and I haven't heard back from him. He has made his appointment, and we'll see what happens. So,
okay.
I'll let you all know when I hear more about that. What I wanted to share tonight was, you know, the first time that I took the assessment was in December of 2010, and I haven't taken it again because I just didn't feel that I was changing significantly enough. And over the weekend, I decided to do it again because I felt a shift. And I'm really happy to report that I improved on 12 different areas. It shocked me. It absolutely shocked me. And I fell behind in about 5 different areas, which was okay, but I'll figure that out at some point. But the way it pertains to what we're talking about tonight is that my discipline and structure, I got all those oranges that I had changed to greens, and my loyal stayed blue. But my self-esteem went from orange to red. I thought, oh, my gosh, what did I do? How could that happen if I improved in my discipline and structure, but I took a step back in my self-esteem in whole and complete? Do you have any insight on that?
I do. The discovery is that in the discipline and structure area, when we need to be right and somebody doesn't agree with us, that over 95% of the time they're pushing a button in self-esteem. It doesn't cause it to be pushed. It does cause it to be pushed. It doesn't create it, the challenge. It's just pushing the same button we're pushing. So the question is, why are we pushing that button? Because if we weren't pushing it, if somebody else needed to be right, they wouldn't push it either. So the question is, what's happening? So go to your assessment, go to the bottom right-hand side, and tell me how the colors are doing in terms of self-direction, honorable, goal-oriented, coachable, pragmatic, resolute. How are you doing down there?
Okay, I stayed the same. I got green and self-directed, orange and honorable, red and goal-oriented. That all stayed the same. I improved from coachable from red to orange, and then I went down in pragmatic from green to orange, and resolute's green.
Okay. Now, let's go to joy in the journey. Tell me what the colors are.
Okay, I stayed the same in as red and grateful. Orange and persistent stayed the same. Improved from red to orange in effective, and stayed the same in as green and realistic, green and diligent, and went from orange to green and vigilant.
Wonderful. Okay. Let me give you a couple things to consider. In mental creation, this is where we're creating the expectations for how we would like our life to be. There's a possibility that we're still using goal-oriented destructively, that we're going into the future to a time when things are better and then imagining what it's going to be like. Or we might go into a little destructive behavior, discouragement, frustration. With a red goal-oriented, it's going to be so critical. You go back and listen to that call from 2 weeks ago on mental creation and absolutely drill down consciously throughout the day on those 5 constructive ways of thinking. Catch yourself all day long. Where am I right now? Whoa, get back over here. I'm going to stay in creation. I'm not going to get discouraged. I'm not going to be frustrated. I'm not going to go into fantasy. I'm going to stay in mental creation. I'm going to stay in inspiration, exploration, problem solving, planning, and goal setting. That's where I'm going to stay. What can I create? How can I create that? How will that serve? I want to engage, embrace, create value, connect and serve, contribute to the world, all those pieces we talked about in that call. I'm going to stay there because whatever's happening, we know that joy in the journey is measuring how do we feel about our life in relationship to where our mind has already been. And there's some evidence, Diana, that your mind has seen something, and it's seen it so clearly that every time life shows up differently, you just get one of those lightning bolts of cortisol. Just,
mm-hmm.
And that causes us to turn inward and say, what's wrong with me? And that's what's hammering self-esteem. Almost always is hammering self-esteem. In the first measurement, we'll question our worth or our worthiness. Maybe I'm not worth anything, or maybe I'm not worthy to have a job, or confident. Maybe I don't have the ability I need, or valiant. Maybe my belief system's all messed up, and I thought I could, but I can't. And you can start to hear all that dialogue start to play out in our mind. That's his primary source, is unhappiness from an unmet expectation, the expectation having been created in mental creation. Go back this week. Be hyper-vigilant about paying attention to where your mind is at any given time through the day. Because we can get in a habit of doing some things, and it's such a habit, we may not even be conscious we're there. And so it's going to take read a scroll. Scroll 6 would be a good scroll for you. Be in control of your thoughts, choosing, not going to go there today, I'm going to stay in creation, and consciously going into creation, getting inspired ideas and acting on them. You know, and sometimes we'll get discouraged. Well, I've been getting inspired ideas, and I acted on them, and they didn't work out the way I thought they should. We're almost done. And that is exactly the time we need to do it with even more hypervigilance, over and over again. Because if we're pushing those buttons in self-esteem, when we feel like we really have a good idea and someone doesn't agree with us, they're going to push the same ones. And they're painful enough when we push them. Does that make any sense at all to you?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I get it now.
So zero in on where is goal-oriented taking you. This is not going to resolve itself till you are conscious of where you spend your time during the day. Lying in bed at night or in the morning or when you're driving in the car. Where is your mind? What's it focused on?
So I've kind of improved on when other people push my buttons, but I haven't improved in me pushing my own buttons.
You're letting go of the need to be right. You're letting go of some of the risk of needing to be right to a point that you take it personally. But you're still pushing your own buttons really hard.
Yeah,
you don't need anybody else to push them. You're already doing it yourself.
Yeah.
You're being really tough on yourself because life isn't turning out the way you'd hoped it would.
Uh-huh.
But it is what it is. This is life. Let's take what is and create the most we can with it instead of constantly being frustrated by it. You know, my mind saw me somewhere else and it didn't work out that way. Well, what's true? Where our mind has been or where we are? We keep wanting to be where our mind wants us to be. Well, it's not real. And especially if our mind keeps going to a time when things are easier, better, more profitable, you know, those kinds of discussions. So just get conscious about where it's going. See if you can get yourself going into that dungeon of discouragement for a minute or slipping up to fantasy. Catch yourself going there and stop it. No, I'm staying in creation. There is a solution to this, and I will find it. And if my objective is to engage in life, truly engage, embrace the principles of creation, connect and serve other people, and create value everywhere I go and to contribute to the world, if that's my true burning desire, then I'm asking the question, what do I create? How do I create that? How do I serve? You will receive inspired ideas, and if you'll pay attention and act on them, you'll begin to create a different outcome. You'll be spending time with your true self. It's a very exciting place to be. How could you beat up yourself when you're spending time with your true self and the magnificence of your true self? That's how you clean up self-esteem. It's not the only way, but it's the primary way. Because unmet expectations contribute to probably 80 to 85% of all frustration internally with ourselves. Gosh, what's wrong with everybody else? Seems to be okay. Everybody else has got it going on. You know, does God not love me? I mean, what's wrong with me? There's nothing wrong with us. We're just focused on where our mind wants us to be versus taking what we have, the clay we've been given, and creating the most we can with it. So stay in that space, okay? Congratulations on the improvements. Isn't that awesome?
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was real excited about it.
You should be. You should be. Now you can take all that energy and say, I'm going to crack this goal-oriented. It really has got some control over me. I don't want to give it. I'm going to crack it. I'm going to find out where it's going, and I'm going to redirect it to a place where it'll serve me. That's, you're getting clearer so you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone. Anyone else have a question or comment? Thank you, Diana. That's awesome. Anyone else tonight that I can serve? Okay, well, we're at the top of the hour. Thank you for your time tonight. We look forward to being back with you next Tuesday. I just want to make a note, the following Tuesday we'll be coming and broadcasting from San Diego. We'll be there for Greg Reed's Secret Knock. Greg's the writer of 3 Feet from Gold. We've been invited to come up there and speak at his event, and so we'll break away and do our phone call that evening. But we're looking forward to being back with you next Tuesday night. Come off of mute, if you would, and just say good night so we can hear your voice.
Good night. Thanks, Dave.
Good night. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.